Book of Ruth. We will cover the things that we want to cover in the study, but we have enough time that we can actually read Ruth, and then I'll have some questions for you after each little section, and we'll quiz through those things and see if we can figure out what Ruth is about. And at the end, the last slide is what we'll look at for the focus of our study, these characters of faith. So let's start out with Ruth, and I titled this lesson, A Story of God's Providence. If you took the opportunity to read the book of Ruth, it probably took you about 10 minutes. It's a little tiny book. I mean, you're talking about probably less than 100 verses total. But it's a great story. For those of you who took the opportunity to read Ruth, what is the setting of Ruth? Where is this taking place? During what time period? Correct. So we're looking at the time of the judges. That narrows our time down considerably to that time period, okay? But it doesn't really tell us exactly when. We can target it a little bit better by knowing who Ruth's son is. That kind of gives us an idea of about when it happened. But somebody raise their hand if they can tell me how old Obed was when he died. Okay, so I don't know either. So that was Obed is Ruth's son. He's the father of Jesse, who is the father of David. So David's great-grandfather is Ruth's son, was Ruth's son. So that gives you an approximate time period. It was during the judges. And it was during a famine during the judges. So that kind of sets your backdrop for what happened with Ruth's mother-in-law and her husband and her sons, and why they were not in Judah at the time. Where we actually pick up with Ruth. So let's start with chapter 1. And I'm going to get the pointer out just because I want it. So, chapter 1. And now it came about in the days when the judges governed that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah. Now they entered the land of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. Those two sons took for themselves Moabite women as wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and the woman was bereft of her two children and her husband. So, why did Elimelech take his family to Moab? A famine. So, was it wise for a Jewish family to leave Judah for the hope of protection in Moab? That's my question. Was it wise to leave God's promised land, searching for something better in the land of Moab?
No.
I would agree no. I would say that they made a poor choice, looking for something, and I think God has been very clear about this, that the Jews were never to look towards their enemies for protection, especially in this situation. What do we know about the judges period? How faithful were the Jews during that period? Yeah, they were up and down and all over the place. Is it possible that this famine was caused because of unfaithfulness? Yep. Is it possible that it was just a natural occurrence? Absolutely. But we say, if you read through the book of Judges, you read that the Jews were persecuted by their enemies. They were punished by God many times because of unfaithfulness. Whether that was the situation here, I don't know. But the choice that they made to leave Judah, to leave Bethlehem, looking for something better in the land of Moab, which we're going to get into in just a minute. Well, let's get there now. That's not what I wanted. Okay. Hold on just a second. Pause. I had updated this presentation, and I am going to download that because I have a specific map that I want to look at, and I think it helps explain a lot of this. So it'll be just a second here. Let me get my most current version of this up. Anywho, while I'm working on this, the Moabites. So what I want to look at is, who were the Moabites? Does anybody know what relation the Moabites were to the Jews? Just speak it out. Go ahead, Bill.
They were the children of the son of Lot. One of the sons of Lot.
Children of the daughters of Lot? Because actually, they weren't his son's children. Whose children were they? They were Lot's children by his daughters.
Well, Moab was one of his sons.
No. Moab was the production of his daughter getting Lot drunk, and then being impregnated by the father, which is not a good thing. So one of the daughters had the Moabites. His name was Moab. The son's name was Moab. The other daughter did the same thing the next day with her father, and her son's name was Ben-Ammi, who is the father of the Ammonites. Okay? So, first of all, we have these Moabites. And what do we know about the Moabites as Israel tried to move into the Promised Land? When they tried to go across the Moabites' land, what happened? They wouldn't let them. The Moabites hated the Jews. So, why I asked that initial question of, was it a good idea to leave Judah, Bethlehem, looking for something better in Moab, was that a good idea? I mean, knowing what we know about the relationship between the Moabites and the Jews, I don't think that that was probably the best idea. They may have found food, but does it look like it was an easy life for them if Naomi's husband and her two sons all died within 10 years? Does it sound like an easy life? I mean, it could have been that it was just a coincidence that all three of them died horribly, quickly within that 10-year period. But it seems to me that they made the choice to leave what they knew and where their family was for something different because of a temporary setback in the famine that they had going on there. And that being the case, I'm not sure that they made the best choice for their family. And I think that is shown in the fact that Naomi was left with no husband and with no sons and two daughters-in-law. So, moving on, let me go back to the... while I'm finishing this up. I'm going to reopen this and we'll come back to this slide in just a minute. Yes, technology. So in verse 6, then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the land of Moab, for she had heard in the land of Moab that the Lord had visited his people in giving them food. So obviously sometime in between when they left to go to Moab and when she was heading back, the famine was over. So this is a, you know, it lasted somewhere within 7 to 10 years. But would they have been better off to stay at home and to deal with the famine? Who knows? So she departed from the place where she was and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each of you to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you, as you have dealt with the dead and with me. May the Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband." Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, "No, but we will surely return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return, my daughters. Why should you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Return, my daughters, go, for I am too old to have a husband. If I said I have hope, if I should even have a husband tonight and also bear sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is harder for me than for you. The hand of the Lord has gone forth against me." So, why did Naomi want her daughters-in-law to stay behind? Okay. Why was it best for them? Why wouldn't it have been good for them to come to Bethlehem with her?
Because Naomi was going back to the Jewish
and they were Moabites. Okay. So what did the Jews think about Moabites? Probably the same thing that Moabites thought about the Jews, right?
No husband.
Yeah. So they would have a hard time, a hard row to hoe, living in Jewish society. They would be outcasts. They would be treated as outcasts. So she's telling these daughters, go. You have a better life here in Moab than you're ever going to have in my land. You will be mistreated. You'll have a hard time finding husbands to take care of you. And chances are, you're going to find a better life here in Moab than you'll ever find Yes. Well, that was Jewish tradition, but they weren't Jews.
No, but they had married Jews.
They had married Jews, but the Jewish men had taken wives outside of the land of Judah. They were in Moab when they took those wives. So the question is, do we think that these daughters-in-law, have they given up their foreign gods? Have they started worshiping the God? What does Naomi tell these women when she tells them to leave? Go back to your families. Go back to your gods. We're not quite sure what's gone on here. I think we can tell from the heart of Ruth, as we get further into the story, that she wanted to be part of this nation. She wanted to stay with Naomi. She had obviously been taught something about God, whether through Naomi or through her son, through her husband that she had married. Jewish tradition would say yes, because they didn't have children, that a family member would take them and would give them a child, and they could raise that for the inheritance. And that's what we're going to see down the road here. But whether or not that applies to these two, whether Naomi was thinking this about both of them, I'm not sure, because it seems Naomi is torn. She loves her daughters-in-law, but she tells them both to go. So I don't know that she was really thinking about them having sons via a Jewish relation or not, via a Jewish relative, or whether she was looking out for their best interest in what she thought was going to be a very hard life for them as Moabite women in the land of Judah. But yes, you are correct. As the story turns out, that is what happens with Ruth, is because she makes the choice to come to Jewish land with her Jewish mother-in-law and decides that she is going to be a person who worships God, who trusts in God, and who does what her mother asks of her, she has submitted herself to the Jewish traditions, and she's willing to do so. Whereas her sister-in-law Orpah did not. She chose to go back to what she knew, to her family, and to everything that she knew. So, let me get this. This should be my most current presentation. And what it has on here is a map that I want to look at so we get an idea of where this, where Moab is. And it's not really any mystery. Moab is, let me see if this is the most current present. Yeah, there it is. So, Bethlehem, right here.
Actually, I think I have a...
Yeah,
but it doesn't
look that one.
There's Bethlehem, where they
live. And so they came down here to Moab. Other side of the Dead Sea. And it's quite a hike. I mean, we're talking a decent trip that they took. And so it would have taken them several days to get there. And they spent 10 years there on the other side of the Dead Sea and trying to make a life for themselves there. But it didn't work out that well for them. As Naomi says in her own words, she thinks the Lord's hand is against her. But Ruth, in verse 16 of chapter 1, said, "Do not urge me to lead you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse, if anything but death parts you from me." And I think this gives us an insight into Ruth's mind. She has chosen to leave her people, the Moabites, and wants to be part of the Jewish people. She wants to follow her mother-in-law. She's going to participate in their traditions. She's going to obey their laws. And she wants to make their God her God. She wants to be part of that life. In verse 18 of chapter 1, when she saw that she was determined to go with her, she, that is Naomi, said no more to her. So Naomi caves in and says, "Okay, fine. If you want to go with me, then let's go." So I think we made it there, yeah. And I asked the question, Orpah returned to her people, did Ruth? We answered that question. Ruth did not. Was Ruth raised in the Lord? No, she wasn't. She was raised in Moab. She probably had heard of God, the God of the Jewish people, Yahweh. But was she raised in that? Doesn't sound like it. Naomi references, when she tells the girls to go back, references their gods. So it sounds like they were raised to follow idols. But Ruth made a choice. She gave that up, and the Lord Yahweh was going to be her God. And what does Ruth's commitment to her mother-in-law say about her faith, is the question I have. And that's not something you have to answer right now, but keep that in mind. What does Ruth, giving up everything that she knows, where she was raised, her idea of what life was like, and going to live with these people who are mortal enemies, who hate each other, knowing that she's probably going to have a hard life for doing so, what does that say about her faith in God? In verse 19, so they both went until they came to Bethlehem. And when they had come to Bethlehem, all the city was stirred because of them. And the woman said, "Is this Naomi?" She said to them, "Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me." All right, so what did Naomi want to go by? What name did she choose for them to call her? Mara. What does that mean?
Bitter.
What does Naomi mean? Pleasant. So Naomi was known as Pleasant. That was her name, what her name meant. She wanted to be known as Bitter. And then, moving on, "I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi or Pleasant, since the Lord has witnessed against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me?" So Naomi returned, and with her Ruth, the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, who returned from the land of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. All right. Chapter 2, verse 1. So now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. So what is gleaning? Right. So after they go through and they harvest the wheat, they leave some, a little bit, for the poor, for the needy, for the slaves. Yeah, for anybody who needed some food, they would leave some of the harvest for them to pick up. So that's what's going on here. Ruth is not part of the harvest. She's just picking up food to live on for her and Naomi, because Naomi no longer has a husband. She no longer has any sort of inheritance because her husband is dead. We're going to see that there is inheritance to be had, but it's owned by who? By tradition and by law, who owned that? The closest male relative to Naomi. Okay, and we're going to see that later on in the story. And this inheritance right now does her no good. So in order for them to survive, they're having to glean off of their kinsman's field. So Ruth is going out and picking up food enough for the two of them to survive. And that's where we are in the story right here. Verse 4. "Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, 'May the Lord be with you.' And they said to him, 'May the Lord bless you.' Then Boaz said to his servant, who was in charge of the reapers, 'Whose young woman is this?' The servant in charge of the reapers replied, 'She is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab.' And she said, 'Please, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves.' Thus she came and has remained from the morning until now. She has been sitting in the house for a little while." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" And Boaz replied to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know." So we got that done. What did Boaz know about Ruth? Sounds like he knew a lot more than we did about Ruth. Sounds like he had gotten the whole story about Ruth. He knew what she had done. He knew who she was. He knew what choices she had made. And he knew what kind of person she was, what kind of heart she had. And he was willing to go the extra mile. We see in this part right here that he commands the servants not to touch her. Being a Moabitess, she was pariah in this area. The Jews wanted nothing to do with the Moabites. And her bleeding on a field that was for the poor and the needy in the Jewish people is... Don't be surprised if they tried to beat her off of it, because these things were being left for the needy of the Jews, not the needy of the foreigners, and especially not a Moabite woman. But Boaz specifically commands his servants to leave her alone. In fact, she is fine drinking the same water as the reapers. She is fine sitting in the shelters that the reapers use during the hot part of the day. And she is allowed to glean after the reapers have finished their work. So, verse 12 in chapter 2. May the Lord reward your work, and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. Then she said, I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me, and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here, that you may eat of the bread, and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied, and had some left. Was Boaz concerned about Ruth? Absolutely. He wanted the best for her that he could provide. He was willing to go that extra mile to protect her. He was willing to make sure that she was as comfortable as he could make her in her situation. And he had commanded his servants to make sure that that happened, even inviting Ruth to sit at the table with the reapers and partake of the meal that was offered there. When she arose to glean, Boaz commanded his servant, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. Also, you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles, and leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. So this is like the fourth commandment we have from Boaz, telling his servants not to abuse Ruth. What does that tell us about how the Jews treated Moabites? Like them at all. They wanted nothing to do with them, and they definitely did not want them in their land. Okay? So Boaz is taking care of his relative. He's taking care of Ruth, who had married his blood, and who had chosen to give up her land and her people and come live in his land with his people. All right, I think we're in 17 now. She gleaned in the field until the evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. She took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. So Naomi not only got what she gleaned from the field, but also got the meal that had been served, because she had saved part of that meal for Naomi. Her mother-in-law then said to her, where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked, and said, the name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead. Again, Naomi said to her, the man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives. Then Ruth, the Moabitess, said, furthermore, he said to me, you should stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids, so that others do not fall upon you in another field." So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. That ends chapter 2, and we see that Ruth is going to continue in this life for a while, through at least through the harvest season, where she is taking care of her mother-in-law by gleaning after the harvesters and bringing food to her and doing what she can to support her mother-in-law. Chapter 3 and verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now is not Boaz our kinsman, with whose maid you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet, and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do." She said to her, "All that you say, I will do." So what is now Naomi's plan here? This is like Match.com. Yeah. So the tradition, I can't tell you what the tradition is. I didn't do any research on what a woman laying at a man's uncovered feet during the barley harvest or on the threshing floor is. I'm not sure what that means. But it sounds like Naomi's trying to play matchmaker. Now, what do we know about Boaz as how he refers to Ruth? What does he call her?
Daughter.
Daughter. So it's not like he's her age. Okay, he's a little bit older than she is. We can assume that from how he refers to her. But does that matter? Does it matter to her? Does it matter to him? And as far as the Jewish tradition goes, it doesn't really matter the age of the relative, as long as that relative is capable and willing to complete the tradition and commandment of the Lord. That is, if your brother or male relative dies before he is able to give a child to his wife, then the closest male relative is to give a child to that woman so she has an inheritance. So Naomi's playing matchmaker, trying to get her a husband. So it happened, when she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of the grain, and she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." Then he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Now, it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good. Let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning." So, the question I have here is, Ruth is willing to do whatever Naomi says when it comes to this. Do you think that Ruth is familiar with Jewish traditions when it comes to this? Probably not. But I think she has an idea what's going on here. I don't think she's dull. I think that she understands what she's doing. That mom is trying to hook her up with this rich man, who is a relative, and I think Naomi has probably explained to her, at least in some way, what the tradition is, what the commandment of the Lord is when it comes to the Jewish tradition of inheritance, and what the purpose of what she was doing was. So, we see that Boaz responds to Ruth in a very positive manner. He is very willing, very eager to take on this role. However, he is not legally the one responsible. There is a relative closer than him. So he has to get permission for this to continue. Verse 14, so she lay at his feet until morning and rose before one could recognize another, which means it was really dark. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. So who's he talking to there? His servant. Anybody who was a witness to her being there at that night. He didn't want it. He didn't want gossip getting out. Nothing had happened. But he didn't want anybody getting offended or just closer relative getting an idea that Boaz was moving in on what could potentially be this closer relative's responsibility. Let's put it that way. In verse 15, again he said, give me the cloak that is on you and hold it. So she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her, and she went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did it go, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done for her. Verse 17, she said, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then she said, wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today. So, is Boaz motivated to settle this matter? Naomi knows that he is. Naomi knows that Boaz wants to do the right thing. Boaz is definitely attracted to Ruth in a way that he wants to... He calls her a woman of excellence. I think that's more than just a physical attraction. He sees in Ruth something that is worthy. And for him, that's something worth working for. So Boaz's main concern here is that he's not the closest relative, and so he has to defer by law to that relative. So Boaz gives Ruth an indication that he is very interested in all of this barley that he gives her to take back to Naomi, that she doesn't come back empty-handed. Boaz wants Naomi to understand that he is interested and he is pursuing the matter and that he's going to get it figured out one way or another. Naomi's advice is just wait, because he's definitely motivated. Look what he gave you. This is a rich donation that he gave to us, and he wants to solve the matter. So just be patient. Let him do what he needs to do in order to solve the matter. Chapter 4. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the close relative of whom Boaz spoke was passing by. So he said, turn aside, friend. Sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down. He took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit down here. And they sat down as well. Then he said to the closest relative, Naomi, who has come back from the land of Moab, has to sell the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. So I thought to inform you, saying, buy before those who are sitting here, and before the elders of my people, if you will redeem it. Redeem it. But if not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one but you to redeem it. And I am after you. And he said, that is the closest relative, I will redeem it. Then Boaz said, on the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of the deceased, in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance. The closest relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself, because I would jeopardize my own inheritance. Redeem it for yourself, that you may have my right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it. Alright, so who did Boaz have to confront? This closest relative. And what was the result and why? So
So he goes to his closest relative in front of the elders and says, okay, you need to buy your land. Is the Moabites allowed to own land in Egypt or in Judah? She, of course, is... She is the only living relative of her husband, since her father-in-law and her brother-in-law are dead. So she is the owner, but has to sell it because she's not a Jew. And this closest relative says, oh, I'll buy it. I want the land. But then Boaz tells him, okay, then you get her as well. And by law, you have to raise an inheritance. And this man says, oh, I can't do that. That'll affect my inheritance. So it sounds like this closest relative maybe didn't have a wife yet or hadn't had children of his own. And so there was going to be a conflict of interest between him doing this, taking part in buying the land and raising an inheritance for the land and his own inheritance. So he gives up that right, gives it to Boaz, and Boaz says, okay, if you don't want it, then I will buy it, and I will redeem it for myself, and I will take on this responsibility. In verse 7, now this was the custom in former times of Israel concerning the redemption and exchange of land to confirm any matter. A man removed his sandal and gave it to another, and this was the manner of attestation in Israel. So the closest relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself. And he removed his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders and all of the people, you are witnesses today that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth, the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, to be my wife in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance, so that the name of the deceased will not be cut off from his brothers or from the court of his birthplace. You are witnesses today. All the people who were in the court and the elders said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, both of whom built the house of Israel. And may you achieve wealth in Ephrathah and become famous in Bethlehem. Alright. So, why did Boaz marry Ruth? The other guy wouldn't. And this was part of the deal. He was the next closest relative. He purchased the land. With the land came Ruth. And with Ruth came the responsibility to raise up an inheritance for Elimelech so that he would not be cut off from the land without an inheritance. So, Boaz takes on this responsibility. And he is ready and willing to do so. In verse 13 of chapter 4, so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the women said to Naomi, blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer. Today, and may his name become famous in Israel. Oh, I had another question there. What kind of reputation had Ruth earned among the people? Bill.
Everyone in the city knows her, a worthy woman.
A woman of excellence. So her reputation preceded her into the land of Judah. The way she had dealt with Naomi, how dedicated she was to her, how willing she was to help her, coming back to her, leaving her people. We've already talked about all these things. But what Naomi had done and how she had carried herself, how she had acted, went before her, and the people knew of her. She was worthy. She was a woman of excellence. So Ruth had earned that reputation, and Boaz was very interested in that. Not that he needed that. He was a wealthy man. But he was very interested in this woman of worth who was so willing to do what she knew was right. What she knew was right for her mother-in-law, and what she knew was right for herself. She had faith that God would take care of her. see, we are in verse 15. May he also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and is better to you than seven sons, has given birth to him. Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. The neighbor woman gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi. So they named him Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. And so we end the story with this sign. It's kind of hard to read, but what it says is, and there shall come forth a rod of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. Isaiah chapter 11 and verse 1. That's a sign that's in Bethlehem. And Ruth is in the lineage of David. She is the mother of David's great-grandfather, which puts her in what lineage? Ruth is in the lineage of Christ. You only find Ruth's name in one other place in the Bible outside of the book of Ruth. Does anybody know where that is? Matthew. She is specifically named in the lineage of Christ. So, yes, Jesse is descended through Ruth, and David is descended through Ruth, but more importantly, Christ is descended through Ruth, through a Moabite woman. What does that tell you about God's sense of irony? So, we got through that. And, yeah, it's Matthew chapter 1 and verse 5, the genealogy of Christ. The book ends with verses 18 through 22. It says, now these are the generations of Perez. To Perez was born Hezron, and to Hezron was born Ram, and to Ram Abinadab, and to Abinadab was born Nashon, and to Nashon Salmon, and to Salmon was born Boaz, to Boaz Obed, and to Obed was born Jesse, and to Jesse David. So Ruth is the great-great-grandmother of one of the most powerful kings of Israel there ever was. One of the very best known, and one of the kings of Israel that was closest to God's heart. So about Ruth, we have about 10 minutes, and this last slide is what I was talking about. Ruth had faith even though she didn't know God. She wasn't raised like the Jews were. She wasn't raised to know God. She was raised to worship idols. When Naomi talks to the two daughters-in-law, tells them to go back, she specifically tells them, go back to your family, go back to your home, go back to your gods. So that's not to Yahweh. That's to whatever idols they had been worshiping before they married into Naomi's family. Ruth was willing to learn of God from her new family. That's, I think, obvious. She was willing to give up everything that she knew, everything that she loved, her own family, her own land, her own gods, and was willing to give that all up in order to follow Naomi into a land where she knew she would probably not be welcomed, where she probably would not be loved, where it would probably be pretty difficult to find a husband in order to have a life. But she was willing to do that because she had faith. She specifically tells Naomi, your God is my God. And I don't know how many of you have grandparents that were faithful, but usually, and as was the case when I was growing up, do grandmothers and grandfathers like to talk about God? Mine did. Mine thought it was really important. And Naomi obviously impressed upon her daughter-in-law how important Yahweh was to her family, to her faith, enough that Ruth was willing to give up everything in order to become part of that family and to follow that family out of everything that she knew. She was willing to give up the gods she was raised to worship for a true and living God. God demonstrated to Ruth through his providence that he was her God too. He took care of her. He showed her that he would. He did what was right in her sight, and Ruth responded in kind, taking care of her mother-in-law, working hard for what she had gotten, and being willing to follow the traditions that were foreign to her, but led her towards Boaz, towards a new family, towards an inheritance, and more than that, towards a promise that God had given so many, many years ago to Abraham, that through his seed would come many nations and become Christ. Ruth faced extreme adversity, and we can tell that by the way Boaz talked to his servants. I think we read 4 or 5 times where they were told not to abuse her, not to mistreat her, and to allow her to glean food. She faced extreme adversity, but never gave up hope. She had lost her father-in-law, she had lost her husband, she had lost her brother-in-law, lost everything, and then left her land and gave up everything she knew in order to have this life. She didn't know what she was going into, but she had hope. She had faith that God would take care of her. God rewarded and blessed Ruth for her faith. So as we look through these characters, these are the examples we want to see. Is characters who were everyday people like you and me, but who were willing to give up the things they knew, were willing to give up comfort, were willing to give up the blessings that they may have had through their own family or through their own home, through their own land. Ruth is a special example of the characters we're looking at in that she wasn't a Jew. Most of the other characters we're going to be looking at through this course of study were Jews. And many of them, as we looked at on Sunday evening, were examples of people who maybe weren't the shining character of what somebody following God should be. But we can see through their faith and through the things they were willing to do, the things they were willing to say, and how they lived their lives, that they were faithful people. That doesn't mean they were perfect. That doesn't mean that Ruth was perfect. But she had faith that God would take care of her. She had faith that there was hope where she was going. And what we'll see as we study the rest of these characters of faith is that they're much the same. They chose to follow God, even in the face of adversity. That's all I have about Ruth, and we have like 3 minutes left. Does anybody have any comments? Bill?
The original question is, was it wise for them to go to Moab? Perhaps not. God needed to happen.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, going back to Sunday night's lesson, was it wise for Jacob to lie in order to get that inheritance from Esau? I don't think that was God's intention. God would have made it happen if it didn't happen that way. But God told Rebekah that that's the way it was going to be. That the older would worship the younger, would kneel down to the younger. Same with this. Was it wise for Elimelech to take his family there to flee the famine? Probably not. But was it the way it worked out? Did it work out for the best? Absolutely. Carol.
Faith comes from her life with Naomi and the brothers and her father-in-law. In other words, she could tell from her life with them that no matter what faced her ahead, that she could tell that their God was better and that their way of life was better, even if it was poor in some way, than what her life, the God that she was raised.
Absolutely.
And so it created a faith from the exposure of the people who we came in contact with, which reminds us all to continue to be an example of the people we talk to.
And it reminds us that she being a Moabite woman, we don't kind of have these cultural issues in our country right now. But it's anybody can come to Christ. Anybody. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're young, rich, old, young, if you're a different nationality. And it doesn't matter if you're the worst sinner out there. God takes everybody. Sabre.
What you're saying, that God takes everyone, the two women stand out in the Old Testament would be Rahab and Ruth.
Absolutely.
And they're both not Jews.
Right. And I can't say what Ruth's lifestyle was, but we know what Rahab's lifestyle was. And I don't think that's something that most people would look up to. But God used her. Absolutely. Bill.
What Sabre said is true. But I'm just finishing the book of Esther, and she was an Israelite, but she was extremely important in Israel's history.
Mm-hmm.
And she married a foreign king. So that put her in a position to save tens of thousands of her own people.
Absolutely. Agreed. Any other comments? We will be dismissed for the evening. Thank you.